Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k. Welcome everyone to this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast, where each week we bring you education and information that will help you take your next step in building wealth. I'm your host, Lauren Wells, and joining me today is Justin Maxwell. Hi, Justin. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah. Hi, Lauren. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Justin is a husband and father of three crazy boys located in Utah. He focuses on helping business owners use government programs and laws to keep more of their hard-earned money. So he's focusing on helping these business owners put systems and automations in place to capture the savings and put it towards wealth building instead of being mindlessly spent. So we talked a little before I did the intro, and I'm fascinated by this. Tell me how you got into this.
For me, it's a pretty wishy-washy road. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, I chose out of college to end up here. It wasn't that case. So I happened to listen to, because I was a school teacher, honestly, actually taught physical education. So Okay. Nothing on the finance or wealth building at all side, pretty much the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I had an event occur in my life where I was like, I don't want, because I thought I wanted to be like a college professor. And I just had this event occur where, you know what, this isn't what I want to do anymore. And it just sparked in something in me that I need to do something else. And I happened after that event, I attended an event of a thought leader in the financial industry. His name is Garrett Gunderson. And just the words resonated at just a deep level with me. And it's very much the principle of what we're going to be talking about today. But that's what sparked my change into this. And it drove me into this industry and allowed me to find a way in without having to go back to school and get all my stuff, all like the typical licenses, what you'd see like with a CPA or something like that. Yeah. But I can be in the industry, make an impact, and still be a really valuable voice. Just help people focus on keeping more of the money that they've already made and just be more efficient with it. And as you're more efficient with it, you can then take the efficiency and make more wealth out of it.
Yeah, I love that. It's so funny. Chris and I have hosted this podcast for quite a bit, and I don't think I've had anyone say it was a linear path. Most everyone never sets out to end up in real estate or investing, very few. So I love that. I love to kind of hear where people started and what kind of was that turning point. So after you attended the conference, what was the first, I guess, iteration of what your business is today? How did you start?
Yeah. So when I first went to that, I was like, well, I got to start. Like, it's so for me, like, I chose teaching because it was safe. I could get a consistent income, but teaching has a ceiling. It's like defined. Like, as you go into teaching, you know what your impact or overall income potential is. It's budgeted out and you know what it's going to be for the next 30 years because you're already on the scale. And so I chose that purposely. Like, I don't know if I was afraid of failure or what it was when I was at the time, but when I listened to Garrett speak, it was like, I can go make income for myself and I can be selfish. And actually, it's not being selfish. It's being selfish to myself so I can help more people and bring more value to the world. Yep. And so the first thing that I did, just like as an exploratory try, was I like thought real estate would be a great place to go. So I started like a real estate investing company. We did fix and flips. We brokered like seller finance notes a little bit. Like, we did all sorts of just different things.
Yeah.
And in that process of that journey, I met my business partner who was also a real estate flipper, but he hadn't always been a real estate flipper. And so we joined up and we wanted to do something together and we built this there. So it started and bred from real estate, but it was more of, people always complain about like, I'm always paying too much of taxes. I really have solutions. Like, there's always people complain about stuff. And so we wanted to solve that problem by, there's things available. We've learned a lot from our experience in the real estate industry. How can we then bring this type of stuff? So it started out as just a few specific, really simple strategies like cost segregation, the research and development tax credit. And then it's grown to other more robust programs of here's really specific and complex trusts you can issue, or here's some other just different variety of combining different things with donations and all sorts of stuff to keep more of the money you make. So it's been a long journey, but it started in real estate.
I love that. And I think that's so interesting. I mean, I started my own business a while ago, and I remember thinking a few years in, man, I'm paying so much in taxes. It might just make sense to go back and get a W-2 job. Then I don't have to worry about the nightmare of like the bookkeeping and all of that. And that's another story. I should have outsourced for that. But I wish I'd had something like this to tell me like, hey, you can take advantage of these programs that will help do exactly that. So if I was a business owner to come to you today, like what does your process look like when you work with business owners?
Yeah, the first thing we start with is helping them understand what the tax code actually is, because I think it's this mysterious document. But what is it and what is its purpose? And so just simply, the tax code is the rule book on how United States citizens are taxed. The very first couple of pages are, this is how people are taxed. The rest of the tens of thousands of pages are how not to be taxed. So the way it essentially, the easiest example I like to give is if you have children, which most people that have children understand, when you have a child, you get a tax credit for having a child. The reason you get a tax credit is because in the tax code, there's a rule that says if you meet this criteria of having a child, you receive a tax credit. So is what you need to do with the tax code is you need to approach it very similar, is how can I meet more of the criteria of the tax code? The more criteria I meet, the more I'm going to pay less in taxes because I've done something that the United States government values more than tax dollar money. So the United States government values families more than tax dollar money. And so they give you a tax break. So they value real estate. So if you buy more real estate, they value landlords because they know people need a place to live. So they give you a tax break for owning real estate. So the more criteria you can meet, the less you're going to pay in taxes. And so we start there and then we help people meet more criteria so that they can pay less in taxes.
So does this work for like regardless of the way a business is set up? Or are there, would you say, better kind of structures, whether it's S-Corp, LLC?
Yeah, so there's a variety of strategies. The very simplest, the S-Corp provides just a very simple strategy because it allows you to differentiate your income between ordinary income and passive income. So you can take W-2 income and you can take dividends or distributions. Your distributions don't have to pay FICA on it. So you can distribute and divide that line so that you can minimize your W-2 and get more of your money as distribution. So that's a really simple strategy for people. Mm-hmm. S-Corps, that's like the tax strategy. If you're just an LLC, that's just like asset protection versus tax strategy. S-Corp adds a tax strategy to your entity protection side of things.
Awesome. What are some of the, I guess, how do people find you or how do you find people?
Yeah. So is what we go about doing is we typically work with business owners that are paying, I guess not necessarily a payment amount, but they're making $250, $300, $400, $500 plus $1,000 a year. Because at that point, you're starting to feel more pain in the taxes you're paying. Like prior to that, like it always sucked to pay taxes, but you start to actually feel it way more because a larger percentage of your income starts to disappear. And it just feels like you're making more money, but you still are living in the exact same boat that you were when you were making 150. So that's our clientele. We typically find people by going and speaking at events, doing podcast guesting, getting referrals from our clients. But that's our clientele is who we're speaking to because we know that they have a pain point here and we know that we have a solution for them.
And what are like some of the most common, I guess, misconceptions that they have when they start working with you?
Yeah, the biggest one is well, I already have an accountant. I don't need to switch. And they think I'll take over their accounting, which isn't the case. And so the biggest thing that we help people realize is that as your tax bill increases, you need to increase the size of your tax team. It needs to go from just an accountant to a tax strategist. You probably need to start bringing in tax attorneys. Eventually, the more money you make, the bigger your tax team is going to get. Like it doesn't need to be massive all the time, but you need to start adding more and more people. Because you need to more and more specialties. So those specialties can help you meet more and more areas of the tax code so that you can access them and pay less tax. So we help people. That's the biggest misconception is that they're going to switch over to us for their accounting. And we're not that. We're just the tax strategist person that's going to work with their accountant already in collaboration to help them pay less tax.
Got it. So you mentioned a facet of this is if a business owner has student loan debt, because I noticed you talked about student loan debt in your bio you sent over. How does, and you say you work with them on, you know, programs that can help them pay off that debt. As we know, student loan debt is a debilitating debt that feels like a burden on a lot of families, business owners, individuals. So what are some of the, I guess, strategies to help mitigate that burden?
Yeah, this is a really big issue for a lot of people. It's one of the reasons that current administration, the Biden administration, has done that, well, proposed the or tried to do the forgiveness mm-hmm. is because so many people are complaining about this and so many people have this. And it's really a shame that people, even like the government, doesn't even understand what is available and already passed into law for a lot of people. So forgiveness, which is what is President Biden is trying to offer here with $10,000 to $20,000, is already built into the law. Like it's already been passed by Congress and by the presidents in the past. But to access the forgiveness, you have to be in specific government programs. And so is what we help people strategize around is, can you get into a government program that has forgiveness built into it and allows you more flexibility around the way that you pay back your student loans? And so when I say more flexibility, is what I mean by that is typically people say, I'm going to pay off my student loan in 25 years. It's going to give me a $1,500 a month payment, but I'm going to have to pay a ton in interest. Like I'm going to pay hundreds of thousands, or maybe not hundreds, but $100,000+ in interest on top of what I've already owed.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't elect for that. So they go down, well, my strategy is going to be, I'm going to pay it off in 10 years. So I'm going to pay it off faster. So it takes more of their cash flow, but they do get out of debt faster. They paid less in interest, but they still missed out on all of the growth those dollars could have become had they been allocated elsewhere. It took way more of their cash flow. They could have been buying real estate. They could have been investing and building wealth with those dollars, but instead they were paying off their debt. So is what these programs allow you to do is it has time frames. So typically they're going to be 20 or 25 years in there, specifically the business owners, like we're going to be able to make the payment either zero to like 500, somewhere in there. So instead of it being 1500 or 2000 or 2200, it's zero or 500 for the entirety of the program. When you reach the end of the program, your loan gets forgiven and the government takes your loan balance and gives you to the in the form of tax. So instead of you paying, we'll just say $300,000 in total loan balance, I have to pay taxes on $300,000. So the out of pocket on my end is significantly less. But the power and like all of that's really, really great for people is that they reduce their total output of how much they're going to pay in their student loans. Like instead of paying $300, they're probably going to pay like $150 to $140. So it cuts it in half. But the real power in this is if I take the payment that I was going to pay, if I paid it off like everyone else, the $1,500, and I allocate that instead of to consumption and consuming it in myself and doing expenses, I take the $1,500 payment and I put it into assets. That's $1,500 a month every single year for 25 years. Like that becomes a big, powerful asset for the person. Like just in like oftentimes like the simplest, easiest form is just put it into a properly structured whole life policy. Like even in that form, which is like the lowest of like not fabulous growth, even in that form, after 25 years, you're going to have, in the example we've been going with the $1,500 a month, you're going to have over $600,000 inside your whole life policy at the completion. And after you've paid the tax and got out of student loan debt, you'll have over $600,000 in there that can be utilized for the rest of your life. That wouldn't have been there had you just paid it off as fast as you could or paid it off normally because you didn't control the dollar. These programs allow you to control the dollar and actually keep it in your court versus allowing it to just go to the student loan payment.
And why do you think, I mean, I guess I've never heard of this. I'm sure most of your clients have never heard of this. Why do you think that is? I mean, is it just
so,
like how I feel about self-directed IRAs that you can invest in real estate? You don't hear about it and then you do and it kind of blows your mind. Why aren't more people taking advantage of this?
So the problem is the government really sucks at delivering, people could say they suck anyway, but they suck at delivering messages of what they've created. So like you have these pretty smart people in Congress, like you have pretty intelligent business owners that are making these laws in Congress. And they're, I'd say almost every time in Congress, you have people that are self-serving. So if they had an experience in life prior to Congress, they're going to try and solve a problem that they felt and they're going to create a law around it that benefits them. So you have all these people that create these amazing things, but then no one delivers them to the general public. Like it's the same thing with the tax code. Like you have all these ways to save taxes, but then everyone only uses the S Corp, or everyone only uses buying real estate. Like, those are well known, but there's hundreds of other ways to reduce your tax bill that never get talked about. And then when you hear of people like the trillionaire or the billionaires, like the Musks and the, they're not paying taxes. Everyone's like, what the heck is going on? But it's because they are using what this Congress people created. And it's the same thing here, is that the government just doesn't deliver what has been created by these smart people in Congress and set up and established as law to benefit their situation. And it's not distilled. And then that person gets either leaves Congress or elected. And then the new person that comes in doesn't know what the heck was created, and it doesn't get perpetuated, because these programs have been around since the 90s. Like, the Clinton administration was the first presidency to put one of these flexibility programs, income-driven repayment programs, in place. And so nowadays, the big misconception is income-driven equals, oh, that's only for poor people can use it. Like, that's the mindset that comes to it.
Yeah.
That's not, we have people that make $600,000, like not all W-2, but $600,000 that are still eligible for the income-driven repayment program. They're utilizing it to drop their student loan payment and keep it low so they can control the dollar and drive it into wealth-building things.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think there is a misconception that when you think of like income-based, you think, well, I'm probably not eligible. I make decent money. I may be taxed a ton, but I'm not eligible for these programs. And I think that's where, like you said, when you're at that $150,000 a year mark, and then you say double that, you don't feel this huge increase in the way you're living, because you realize so much of your paycheck is still going, more of, or a percentage of your paycheck is going to taxes. And so it is interesting, but at the same time, you, like you said, you feel like you're disqualified from a lot of the programs you maybe would have qualified for at 150.
Yeah. And then the other step is you just don't add team members. So oftentimes we get a little bit obsessed or a little selfish with, oh, I chose my person when I, my team, and this is my team. But it's not bad to add people that have more specialties as you get more sophisticated in your, mm-hmm. When I say more sophisticated, I mean, like, you're increasing your income. So you need to become more sophisticated, because that's why the Musks and the Bezos don't pay as much tax, is because they've increased their team. Mm-hmm. And so you need to be increasing your team, because your percentage of income, it's the same for them. Is it, you're paying 37% and they're paying 30, well, maybe not in that tax bracket, but they're paying the same percentage on those dollars as you are. They're just choosing to be really deliberate about adding team members and specialists that help them access those specific things.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. We wanted to take a moment and tell you more about our passive income fund at 7E, which is open to both accredited and non-accredited investors. Our latest offering targets an 8% annual return distributed monthly, with the ability to potentially achieve a greater return through our bonus share program. If you'd like more information, reach out to us at invest@70investments.com to learn more. Thank you.
What are, I guess, when you talk about these team members, I know you mentioned it earlier. I mean, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So oftentimes when people first start out, I'm speaking in generalities here. I know isn't for everyone, but oftentimes people are going to get a CPA. Like, that's who they're going to choose, and that their CPA is extraordinary. Every person I talk to has the best CPA on earth. And it can't be true, because you can't have everyone having the best CPA, but that's who they choose. And they typically choose like a financial advisor or someone, oftentimes, and again, I'm very broad strokes and this isn't always the case, but they're going to choose like Edward Jones or someone just like the mainstream financial advisors. And those people are going to drive their dollars into qualified plans and into the stock market. But then as they grow, those things, having one CPA and having all your money going in the stock market, don't save you taxes.
Yeah.
Like, you can invest in things and save taxes at the same time. So you can kill two birds with one stone. But if you have only those team members on your place, you're never going to know they exist. And so it's not like you have to replace them, because I think some people like invest in the stock market. So you might want to have the advisor that helps you get in the stock market. But you need to have an advisor that helps you get into real estate, into other alternative investments, like in the energy or the agriculture or other small businesses, because all of those that I just mentioned, if you buy into them right and get in the right situation, you can take part in all of their depreciation and save in taxes, even though you're like, because you're investing in those specific businesses and they're not public offerings, they're private offerings.
Yeah.
So it allows you to both invest and save taxes. So you need to add that person that can access those things for you. And then you need to add a tax strategist so that they can be a little bit more open so the CPA can be aware these other alternatives exist, that there's donations that can add not just a dollar for dollar write-off, but you can get a 2-for-1. So a dollar I donate, I get $2 off my taxes. So if the CPA isn't bringing those things to you, you have to add someone on your team that's going to bring them to you.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. And then as you get bigger, you're probably going to have a tax attorney and all that stuff. But to me, that's like the way you keep more of your money is you increase your team. You're not afraid to offend people. You're okay that this person is really good at the stock market. I'm not offended. I might offend them, but I'm going to add someone else that's going to let me have more variety, more diversity, and more opportunity.
Yeah. No, that's such an interesting point because I know on our end of the business, we deal with a lot of financial advisors and it's stocks, bonds, mutual funds. And I'm kind of seeing this big gap between people who are only stocks, bonds, mutual funds. And then there's kind of like an, I want to say a new wave of financial advisors that are starting to look more at alternative assets. And I think that the people that use them do have an advantage because they are allowed to, they are by default, because their investor or investment advisors looking at these alternative assets, they're able to capitalize on the depreciation if they invest in something, say in real estate or small businesses or whatever that might be. Well, also if they love the stock market, still have that opportunity. And then I think it's interesting because when you say expand your team, the first thing that I thought was, oh, I have to hire a full-time employee. But the way you talk about it, it's not necessarily like you're bringing someone on full-time. That could be the case. But I assume that you could also have kind of like a vendor relationship with some of these. Like your CPA doesn't have to be in-house. Your financial advisor, you're probably paying a percentage. So I think when people think, oh, I have to expand my team, there might be like a, am I going to bring them on full-time? Am I taking on more cost in order to do that? So does it make sense? I don't know if that's something you
bring up. This is a big thing too, when you're evaluating these and adding team members is, are they bringing enough value to my situation to actually justify whatever fee they're going to pay? Because they're probably, well, they're not probably, there is going to be a fee associated with any team member you bring on. Mm-hmm. But if they're not bringing enough value to the situation, then don't bring them on. Like if they're charging huge management fees or huge costs, I'm sure you could find someone else that is more reasonable and brings more value and meets the criteria of, this is the value I want brought here. Like I want you to bring this much in tax savings, or else I have to go with someone else because this person can bring it and they're at the same cost as you. So the value, when you're choosing these team members, it's about value. I wouldn't necessarily go about cost because you could have someone that has a high cost, but brings a ton of value. Yeah. You could have someone that has low cost, but doesn't bring any value. And it's a wasting money on them because they're not bringing enough value to even justify their cost. So when we make these decisions, it needs to be based on the value brought by the individual, not how much they cost.
Do you feel like there's a, and again, you kind of talked about this, like 250, like a range of income that is your ideal client?
Yeah. So I would say once someone crosses into the 30% tax bracket, so they jump from 24 to the 32, that's about where you start to need to make these decisions. Maybe if you're right on the threshold of jumping, like you can stay down in the 20, we can get you into the 22%, but there's not a lot. You don't have a lot of tax savings availability there, like when it comes to the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
So anyone that jumps into the 32, because if you're single, you're going to jump in sooner. If you're married and filing jointly, you're going to jump in later. Like it's not to like 330.
Yep.
But whenever you'd make that jump, that's when you should start bringing, at least looking to expand your team and looking to get into other opportunities.
Awesome. What are some of the ways, because I know you focus on not just, let's take the student loan example. If I'm my payment was $1,500 and I'm only paying $500 now a month. Let's say that multiply that times 12, I'm saving $12,000 a year. What would you say if I was to work with you, what would you recommend me do with that money? Like, what are some strategies that you help to you talk about kind of building that wealth on the side with that money?
So we have two that we go with first. So number one is saving money doesn't matter if you have no way of capturing it. If you're just saving money, and you don't actually do anything to systems or automations in place, that money will be spent by you in some manner of your life. It's the same reason why someone gets a raise and then 2 months later, they're in the exact same boat. They're still living in the same paycheck because as humans, we're unconscious spenders. So the first thing we have to do is we have to put some sort of automation or system or way that we're paying ourselves and capturing the savings so that it doesn't leave us. I mean, we may consume it, but at least we controlled the process first. It wasn't just unconsciously happening. So the first thing we help people set up is just an automated system with a phone application that allows them to insert a new bank account in their life. All income falls into that bank account but the amount that spits out of the bank account into your normal spending bank account stays exactly the same every single month. So what I'm living on stays the same, but as I save money and make more money, it all gets captured in savings inside this bank account. Mm-hmm. I can choose if I wish to send it down to my savings or my spending account.
But yeah.
What we really want people to think bigger about is if I can capture these savings and then choose to allocate them into growth opportunities, I have really taken advantage of something because I've transformed an expense into an asset, which is, that's what we're trying to help people do. So that's step one. Does that make sense? Or was that?
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm just thinking about this in like a personal way. Like if money's in my checking account, I view it as spending money. If it's in my savings account, I don't even look at it. Yep. Like it's not there. It's in like my savings because that goes to other investment options. So I know for a while when I was working in corporate, you had the option to like split your payments and where the, what bank accounts it went to. And I thought that was genius because then you could, as your salary increased, you still had a percentage that was always going to this other account that you kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. I love that. There's more than one way to skin a cat here. Yep. But the big thing is that you set up something that is deliberately establishing so you have a conscious control over all new income and all saved income so that you can either choose to consume it or choose to grow with it. So we call this the wealth reservoir, the wealth capture, the wealth preserve account as the first step. The second step is we have people use a properly overfunded whole life policy as the first stop because it doesn't take the dollar out from use. It's not its final destination. Mm-hmm. So as the whole life policy grows, I have an opportunity to use it again on something else that can do bigger and better for me. So as I find a double digit return opportunity, I can pull it from the whole life and go utilize it for that. So it allows us a more deliberate approach to what we're investing in, and it becomes the holding ground for bigger and better opportunity. But we get consistent tax-free growth with the potential to leave a legacy, which is a big component of what we try to preach anyways.
Yeah.
We don't want our generation starting over every single generation.
Yeah.
The death benefits of life insurance can be a means to help our families not start over, but it's not just the money. It's how can I bring all of the values, all of these principles, all of these wealth building, all of these, how to be a good citizen, how to be a good person, how to be kind, how to be a loving family member with the money. That's like the big impactful way to not start over every generation. So that's why we utilize whole life insurance in this with the student loans. That's the vehicle we use as like the first stop of the dollar.
Now, okay, let me wrap up with this question. If I'm a business owner or someone with student loan debt listening to this podcast, and I was to ask you for your top piece of advice for, I guess, how to make sure that I'm not giving the government all my money, what would you say?
You have to add someone else besides your accountant. That's the biggest piece of advice. Your accountant is most likely, 99% of accountants I've ever met are tax historians. You give them your data and they'll tell you how much you're going to get taxed. Yeah. They might even say, let's meet periodically throughout the year, but they're actually really not giving you anything to do throughout the year. Because the only way to save taxes is to do something throughout the year. There's some sort of action, like we talked about earlier with having a child.
Yeah.
That's an action.
Yep.
It's the same thing with all tax strategies are proactive. So if your accountant is a historian, they're never going to give you proactive things. They're going to help you, minus maybe let's go buy a truck or let's buy stuff. But those are all spend a dollar to save 37 cents. When we do tax strategy, it should be spend a dollar, save at least a dollar in taxes.
Yeah.
I'm not just, it's useless to spend a dollar on something we don't need to save 37 cents. So that's mostly what accountants do. And to solve that problem is you need to add someone to your tax team to give you those things that give you the dollar for dollar write-off versus the dollar for 37 cents.
And if I was to kind of, I guess, for lack of better kind of words, Google what this title should be of this person, what would some of those titles be? If again, I'm an accountant.
Tax strategist is probably the person, the name you'd pop up the most. So this is still like for the income that we're talking about personally, there's still not a lot of people that service them. So the selections are still quite few, but they are there. Like I know of three others outside of us that do a really good job as well in this space. So if you Googled it, you'd find someone that would be able to help you.
Love that. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I mean, this was, when I first started my business, I wish I had known a lot of these things. You know, it's kind of one of those, I feel like I've learned as I've gone and have been mentored by some great people, but this is something I definitely did not have in my back pocket. So thanks for kind of talking to our audience about that. And thank you to our listeners for joining us today on this episode of the CWS podcast. Justin, if people wanted to reach out, where can they find you? How can they get in touch?
Yeah, the two best ways are probably good. I'm on LinkedIn, so you can find me on LinkedIn, just Justin Maxwell. You'll see me. It's Tax Strategist, I believe, is the like title thing. And then the other way is to go to our website at www.biglifefinancial.com/TRP, and you'll end up on my calendar and we can have a discussion. And there's no like cost to that discussion, like, because we can't help everyone. And we can just have a vetting conversation around, are the things that we can propose actually make an impact on your situation?
Yeah, I love that. And for everyone listening, I will put those links in the comments. So thank you again, Justin, for joining us and everyone for listening in today. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to share it with a friend, subscribe, or leave us a review. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.